We're holding on them bays on the bays, six lines from the bottom. We were discussing the fact that we have a machloikus in our Mishnah, between the Tanakhama and the Yehuda and the Yosi about when do the rules of, we said that a woman has to wait 3 months after her husband died or divorced her, or a Yavama has to wait for Yibum or Chalitza, 3 months. And we said the reason is Kedei L'Havchin, in order to be able to distinguish which the baby that was conceived from the first husband from one that was conceived from the second husband. So in that connection, we just said now the Mishnah, the Tanakhama and the Mishnah had said that applies also even if we're just talking about her doing Erusin rather than Nisuin within the 3 months, even though Erusin is not going to lead to conceiving a child. And it also applies even if the woman was an arusa from her first marriage rather than a nesua, even though on the face of it she can't be pregnant from her first husband. Nevertheless, we still, once we're goes of the 3 months, then we make it across the board. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda had said not. Rabbi Yehuda had said that when arusin is involved, then you don't need to wait 3 months. And then we had Rabbi Yossi saying that she can't get married during that first month because of avelos. So we were discussing, we mentioned that Rabbi Yochanan had said the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and then we said Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind. So we asked, how could Rabbi Yochanan anyway say the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi? What happened to halacha to Stam Mishnah? And the answer is that he was not a Stam Mishnah because we actually have, right after it, we have the machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, and that shows, therefore, that it's not a Stam Mishnah. In fact, the rule is, when you have a Stam Mishnah and then a machlokas, then it means the halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah, or we're showing them say it doesn't mean absolutely, the halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah. Sometimes it can be, but it's not necessarily like the Stam Mishnah. So now the Gemara continues in that vein. The Gemara says, Mistimich va'ozo rababohu akasved rabnochum shamoi. Rabbi Bohu was leaning and walking along. He was leaning on the shoulder of his Mishamish, Rabbi Nochum. And while they were walking, Mankit Va'ozo Hilchasemineg. Rabbi Nochum, meanwhile, while they were walking, was gathering halachas from Rabbi Bohu. In other words, he was asking Rabbi Bohu for basic rules in halacha when we say the halacha is like Ploimi and when we say like Ploimi. So among them, he asked him, Bominei, Machloikas Vachat, a Stam Mai, what happens if you have a Machloikas in a Mishnah and later on you have a Stam, which we talked about yesterday. Rashi had stressed that this whole rule of Machloikas Vachat, a Stam, or vice versa, only applies within the same Masechta, or actually Rashi said it applies within the same Seder as well. Tosfos says not necessarily, but the point is it doesn't apply across Sdarim or across Masechtas because those, we don't know whether those were actually taught in the same order as we have. Anyway, so when there's Machlokas and then a Stam, Rav Nachum asks Rav Abahu, what's the din? I'm going to halacha the Stam, so he tells him that shows the halacha is like the Stam. It means that Rebbe, when he's compiling the Mishnayos, First he thought there's a machloikas on it, and then he decided according to one side in that machloikas and therefore put a stam mishnah. What about the other way around? Stam v'achakach machloikas mai. What about if there's a stam mishnah and later on the same sefer or seder or whatever there's a machloikas? Amalei ain't halacha k'stam. And then Rabbi Bohu tells him then the halacha is not like the stam, which again doesn't mean that the halacha is never like the stam. It just means it's not necessary. Okay, then Rabbi Nochum asks him, "Stomad masnisim machlokas bebraisa mai." What if you have a Mishnah that tells us something as a Stam Mishnah, and then in a Braisa it shows that there was a machlokas? Sometimes you'll have. The Gemara will tell us that in a Braisa you'll have something, for example, Zudivre Ploini, but other Tanoim say differently, or you'll have different Lashonis like that. In a Braisa it clarifies that this that it says in a Stam Mishnah is not the last word on the subject. So then what to do? Omoy halacha the Stam. So Rabbi Bohu tells him in that case the halacha is still like the Stam. That's why did Rebbe not bring that machloikas? This precisely because Rebbe held that I don't care about that machloikas. The fact is that the halacha is like the opinion that I brought as a Stam Mishnah. What about, he asks him, machlokas v'braisa, machlokas masnissin v'stoma v'braisa mai. What about if you have the other way around, the Mishnah presents a machlokas, and then a braisa presents a stam braisa, saying saying that the halacha is such and such. So then what's the din? Amalei, so Rabbi Bahu tells him, still the halacha is not like that b'raisa. V'chi Rebbe lo shna Rebbe minayim lo. If Rebbe didn't teach that, then how would Rebbe know it? Rebbe was after all Rebbe's Talmud. So in other words, what happens is over here. So the fact that we have a b'raisa. The fact that we have a braisa, that stam braisa, then how would Rav Chiya know that that's the case, that it's supposed to be a stam braisa? It must be, for whatever reason, Rav Chiya brought only the one opinion, but in fact, the halacha is not necessarily like that braisa. The halacha may well be like one of the other opinions that's in the Mishnah. So Rav Nachum asks, so you're telling me the halacha is like a stam Mishnah, but here, I'll give you an example of a Mishnah, a Stam Mishnah, where we say the halacha is not like it. The Mishnah says, as a Mishnah in Kalin, Masrik Shal Pishton, a comb used for combing flax. So it's got, you think of what a comb looks like. It's essentially not very different than what this comb looks like. In particular, it has very thin teeth. The purpose of it is you're using it when you, after you were in the process of making flax at one point, you have to comb out the flax to make all the fibers lie straight next to each other. So you have a comb for that purpose. So now if you have this comb, it's makabel tuma because the teeth of it are made out of metal and metal kalim are makabel tuma. But shenitlushinov, if the teeth of it were removed, and you have only two left, tmeis, then the comb is still tame because a comb with two teeth can still be used for its purpose of combing flax. In fact, the Tiferes Yisrael adds, it doesn't even need to be that the two teeth are next to each other, even if the two teeth are further apart. Unlike wool, which we're going to discuss next, flax is not that, wool tends to be very tangled, so therefore you need teeth relatively close together to deal with it. Flax is less so, therefore even two teeth far apart are enough to be able to do the work of combing it out. So therefore, as long as you have two teeth left, then it's tame, then it's still makabel tuma. But if you only have one tooth left to hora, then the comb isn't tuma, then the comb is not makabel tuma anymore, because now it's not useful as a cape. And the Mishnah continues, v'cholim shenitlu achas b'fnei atzman, if individual teeth were taken out of this comb, tmeis, then those individual metal teeth are also makabel tuma, because you can use them for different purposes. It actually explains, you can use them, for example, to clean out a candlestick, you can use it, for example, to stretch out cloth, or string or whatever, or separate pieces of cloth or strings one from another with it's shaped like a needle. You can't use it for actual sewing because it doesn't have an eye, but you can still use it like you use a pin to separate things, and therefore it's still makabel tuma. Then the Mishnah continues, shel tsemer. Now, when you have now a comb that's used for combing wool, where wool is more tangled, so you need more teeth. Shenitlushin of achas nebentayim tahor. So there, if every other tooth was taken out, then it's not makabel tuma, because now the teeth are too far apart for them to do anything useful with the wool. Nishtayrba gimel b'makom achad tame. On the other hand, if you have three teeth in one together, consecutive in one part of the comb, then it's still makabel tuma, because then you could still use that part of the comb to comb wool. Now the Mishnah continues, if of those three teeth that are left, now a wool comb, unlike what we were saying, a comb for linen, a comb for wool is more like, if you think of the shape of a regular hair comb, like you find nowadays, the outer teeth are thicker than the other ones. So you think of a typical comb. You have the frame of it into which the teeth are attached. You have on the outsides, you'll have two very, very, very wide, thick teeth. And then between them, you have the thinner teeth that make up the body of the comb. So here, if in this wool comb, there are only three teeth left in one place, and one of those is one of those outer thicker, is one of those outer thicker teeth. Then it's tahor. It's not makabel truma anymore because those outer teeth are not actually used during the combing process. So you need to have, in other words, you need to have the, three teeth in at least one place where you have two spaces between them that can be used to comb the wool. But here where the two spaces are one between the thick tooth and a regular one and another between a regular one, that's not enough to comb wool. Therefore the comb is not makabel truma anymore. Continues the Mishnah. What if two of the teeth are taken out of the comb? And the person took those two teeth and made them into a pair of tweezers. Tmeis. So then there's still makabel truma because then it's a new functional cave. Now they're not used as teeth of a comb anymore, but now they're being used as a pair of tweezers instead. Achas, if there's only one tooth removed from the comb, the skin of a nair, and he made it usable to clean out a candlestick, to clean out a lamp, or the mituach, or to stretch out clothing or leather using it. Rashi describes that when tailors, for example, are sewing something leather, they need a framework sort of to stretch it out on so that they can make good stitches. And so you would use something like that. You'd use like pins or you'd use pins or something like that in order to stretch it out. And here these teeth function as pins. So if you make one of the teeth usable for that purpose, tmeya, then that tooth is still makabel truma because it's still a functional cave. Now, that's the whole Mishnah. So Rav Nochum says to Rabbi Bo, the Kaimalon de Ein Halacha Kodesh in Mishnah. Now we know for a fact that the Halacha is not like that Mishnah. Now why not? It's a Stam Mishnah. Rabbi Bo answers him, Barmi no dahi, never mind that case. You're right, that case is, you're asking about that, but the answer is that case is an exception. You should know that both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, who were both Rabbi Bohu's Rabbeim, both said that this is not a valid Mishnah. In other words, there's a mistake someplace in it, and therefore we can't necessarily call it. It's not a Mishnah that belongs in Mishnayos, such that we should pass them like that. Okay, so the Gemara asked my timer, why not? What's wrong with this Mishnah? Where did they get this from? So Amar of Huna Bamanoyach Mishmeidir of Idi, Breidir of Ita, Mishum de Kasha Reisha Lasefa. The reason is because the Mishnah is contradicting itself from the beginning to the end. De Katani, first it says, Shal Semash and Mithlushinam Achas Nimin Tayim Tahar. First it says, as far as the, let's focus on the part about the wool comb. We're saying if every other tooth was removed, then it's not makabel truma anymore because now the teeth are too far apart to do anything useful with it. So the implication is that if you have two teeth together in any one place, then it would still be makabel truma. So if you have, the Mishnah is telling us, for example, that if you have teeth 1, 3, 5, and 7 have been removed, and you have teeth 2, 4, 6, and 8, are still there, then it's not makabel truma. But the implication is if you have teeth 2 and 3, and then 5 and 7, etc., it would still be makabel truma, because 2 and 3 are next to each other. Then the Mishnah continues that only if there are three of them, it's makabel truma, implying only if there are three of them, not two of them. So therefore, so the Mishnah seems to be contradicting itself, so therefore, how can that be a valid Mishnah? So the one says, my kusha, so what? Why is that such a big kasha that you're saying you want to reject the whole Mishnah because of that? Maybe there's a difference between the inner teeth and the outer teeth. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that, this wool comb has a handle. And you have the teeth. So you have as a handle, and then the teeth are arranged further down along the comb. There you have along the width of the comb. But you can have, let's say, when the two teeth that are left are right opposite the handle. In other words, you have the handle, and then in a straight line with it, you have going down. You have the two teeth. Then those two teeth are more useful. As opposed to, if you have, let's say, so the body of the comb sticks out to the left and the right of the handle. So let's say, for example, that you have that the two teeth that are left are on one of those extensions. In other words, if you look, Rashi's first explanation is that the comb is shaped something like a letter T. So imagine you have that the two teeth that are left are on one of the arms of the T. They're not actually in the middle, in a straight line with the handle. Well, then it's a lot harder to use those two teeth together to comb the wool. Therefore, we might say that they are two are not enough. Only if you have three of them together is it usable. Whereas when you have two of them in a straight line with the handle, in other words, the handle is the body of the letter T, the vertical line of the letter T. If you now stretch that upward and you find two teeth over there, then that would be good. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation, which he prefers, is that the wool comb has two rows of teeth. In other words, you don't have, all this time we've been talking about it, like a hair comb, for example, where it has one row of teeth, one next to the other. Now Rashi says that actually a wool comb doesn't have like that. It actually has two wool. It actually has two rows of teeth. What you do is, you have the outer row of teeth are the ones that do the main work of combing the wool. And then what happens is after you comb it, it passes over the inner teeth, where the inner teeth, the purpose of them is to keep the wool from falling off the comb. After you've combed it through, you want to keep it from falling off. So therefore you have other teeth over there to catch the wool and prevent it from falling. So the outer ones, you need three because that's where you're doing the actual combing. The inner ones, where all you need them for is in order to snag the wool so it doesn't fall off. So they are two or enough. So either way, however we explain, outer and inner in the Gemara. So either way, the point is the Mishnah is not contradicting itself at all. It's talking about two different areas on the comb where the teeth are. So that's not a reason to reject the Mishnah. So the Gemara says fine. Rather, we're going to say that the Mishnah is contradicting itself in another way, where it continues, we said if any individual tooth was taken off by itself, then it's still makabel truma. Now the implication is, even if he didn't reshape it or do anything to it to make it usable for some other purpose, just the fact that it's a metal tooth, which is shaped like a pin, is enough for it to be makabel truma, it sounds like. But then the Mishnah continues, achas vi skinel ner. We said then that, so that was, we said in the first part, we said that in the part about the wool, about the flax comb, we said that any individual tooth that's detached from the comb is still makabel truma. But then further on, as far as the wool comb, we say that only if the skinel, only if he prepared it, only if he shaped it or did something to it to make it usable to clean out a lamp or the mituach or to stretch out cloth or leather tmeya, then it's makabel truma, implying his skin aim or his skin alone, implying that it's only makabel truma only if he actually prepared it for that purpose, only if he actually shaped it. So now the Mishnah is contradicting itself. Is an individual tooth from a comb makabel truma without doing anything else to it or not? So therefore that might be a reason to reject and say that this Mishnah can't possibly be correct. Amar Abaya, but Abaya answers back to that of my kusha. So why is that so hard to understand? I can give you a good reason why to distinguish between the two. Juma haba katayu, haba lo katayu. Because the difference is, maybe one is talking about when they have a handle and the other one not. Meaning, in other words, so these teeth are attached to the body of the comb, but now if the teeth fall out or are broken off or whatever, sometimes you can have, together with the tooth, there comes off a little bit of the wood. Well, if there's a piece of wood that came off with it, then that wood from the body of the comb serves as a handle for it. So it doesn't need any other tikkun. It doesn't need any other preparation in order to be used to clean out a lamp or for whatever of these purposes. Whereas if the tooth came off cleanly, it's only a bare metal pin without any wood attached to it, then you would need to do some tikkun in order to make it be makabel truma. So that's not a reason to reject the Mishnah. It's talking about two slightly different cases. And Amar Rav Papa, and Rav Papa also says, Umay Kusha, furthermore, here's another reason, even if you don't talk about whether a piece of wood broke off with the tooth, here's another reason to say that the Mishnah is not contradicting itself. The Dilma Haba Katinta Haba Alimta, because maybe one part is talking about small teeth, and the other one is talking about bigger, thicker teeth. So smaller teeth, you need some kind of handle in order to be able to use them. Bigger teeth are more like the size of a nail or something, so they don't need a handle. You can use them for cleaning out a lamp or for stretching out cloth or whatever as is without needing a handle. So either way, that's not a valid reason to reject the Mishnah. So Ella, no, the reason why Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish are both saying that Zu ain't a Mishnah, and Rav Nachum brought to Rav Abahu before that we say that the halacha is not like that Mishnah, is Ella Mishum de Misaimi Bodavkoni, rather because the precise Tanoim, when they teach Mishnayas, the ones who are precise end off Zu Divrei Rav Shimon, this is the words of Rav Shimon. Well, then it's not a Stam Mishnah anymore. Not being a Stam Mishnah, the halacha is not necessarily like it. With that said, actually, the Rambam does paskin like all of the dinim in our Mishnah. And on the face of it, why? I mean, if the Gemara is saying over here the halacha is not like it, then why is that? The Pashtos, the Rambam says, because we also don't find really anything else that contradicts it. The Gemara has found that there's nothing in the Mishnah that contradicts itself. All we're saying is Zu Divrei Rav Shimon. Okay, so it means that if we find another Mishnah or another Braisa that contradicts that, then we can say the halacha is not like that. But as long as we don't find such a thing, then the halacha can well be like it. Okay. So that was all a side discussion on this matter of Stam v'achakach machlokes and machlokes v'achakach Stam and all of that. So now getting back to the main topic of our sugya, which is the 3 month wait. So the Gemara says, Shalach Rav Chiya Ba'Avin sent a message saying, Ma'arsin Toich Gimel, you are allowed to do Erusin, a woman whose husband died or divorced her is allowed to have Erusin Toich Gimel within the 3 months. Similar to what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi say in our Mishnah. And he says this is in fact how the Chachamim do in practice, that they allow a woman to do Erusin within the 3 months, because if the whole purpose of the 3 months is Havchana, so during the 3 months there's no concern about Erusin, because anyway it's not going to lead to the conception of a child. Also continues Rav Chiya Ba'Avin. Rav Elazar used to teach us like that in the name of Rav Chanina HaGadol. The Pashtus Rav Chanina HaGadol is Rav Chanina Bar Choma, the Talmud of Rebbe, who succeeded him as Rosh Hashiva. So the Pashtus were calling him Rav Chanina HaGadol as opposed to other Rav Chaninas after him. Anyway. So Rav Elazar taught him the same in his name as well, that it doesn't have to be full 3 calendar months. It's enough Rubei Shodishin with Rubei Shoshlishi and so Yisholim. It's enough to have most of the first month and most of the last month and the entire middle month. In other words, to say if the purpose of the 3 months is to be able to see that the woman is pregnant, then you don't necessarily need 3 calendar months for that. It's enough to have that you have the last 16 days, let's say, of the first month, and then the entire second month, and the first 16 days of the third month. So all you have then is 2 months or 2 days, and that's good enough. You don't need full 3 months. Further, the Gemara says on this, Amema shodala oris b'yemtishin. In fact, Amema wasn't going to go that far and say that a woman is allowed to do Erusin in the middle of the 3 months, but he did allow her... He did allow her to do Erusin on the 90th day. Amalei Rav Ashi la'amemar. So Rav Ashi says to Amemar, how could you allow that on the 90th day? B'har Rav u'Shmuel da'amitavayu. Didn't Rav and Shmuel both say, Tzricha lahamtim gimel chadoshin, chutz miyom shenesboi v'chutz miyom shenisarsaboi? Didn't they say that you have to wait 3 months, and the 3 months are exclusive of the day when the husband died, and exclusive of the day of the Erusin? So in other words, the husband dies, that's day one, that's day zero in effect. We don't count that towards the 90 days, or fine, let's call it day one. Then she has to wait days 2 through 91, which is 90 days consecutively, and then on day 92, is allowed to be the Erisin. So what are you allowing her to do it on the 90th day, which is 2 days early? So I mean, my answer is Mahu the Indian Manekasit man. That statement of Rav and Shmuel was regarding a woman who's nursing. That with her you have to wait the full amount of time. The Rav and Shmuel dami tabayah, because in fact you see Rav and Shmuel both say Sricha lahamtin esrim rabba chodesh chutz miyem shenel adlevo chutz miyem shenesarzavod. So they say, given that nursing in those times generally took 2 years, so the same idea, if a woman's husband died or divorced her and she's nursing, then she has to wait full 24 months, and that's 24 months minus plus the day that her husband died and plus the day of the Erusin. So in other words, if her husband died, let's say, on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, so the 24 months begin from Beis Nissan, and Aleph Nissan 2 years later, and then Beis Nissan 2 years later, she's able to do Erusin. But not necessarily as far as the three months. I mean, I was saying you could maybe do it a little bit earlier. You'd be allowed to do it on the 90th day, because by Menekes, he said the problem is that if she becomes pregnant, then her milk is going to change consistency and it's going to be harmful to her. It's going to be her first baby is not going to have what to nurse, and therefore he's going to end up dying of hunger, because he said not necessarily is she going to be able to get formula or whatever the equivalent of formula was in those days, eggs and milk, we said. So therefore we want to make sure that he has the full 24 months before he's weaned, and only then will we allow her to do everything. But by 3 months of Havchana, Amemar is saying we don't necessarily need all of that, because chances are that we're going to be able to see that she's pregnant a little bit before that. On the other hand, the Gemara asks, "Vahahu de'avad sudas erusin b'yom tishim." Wasn't there a case of a person who made a sudas erusin on the 90th day? So the scenario was that a woman's husband had died or divorced her. Another man had done erusin with her. He made a party. He made a feast to celebrate that. And he had done that on the 90th day. And the afsidei rabba the sudase. And Rav made him, and Rav made him lose his meal. In other words, Rava made him lose his meal. In other words, Rava told him, "I'm sorry, you cannot do the Erusin today. It's still 2 days early. You need to do the Erusin 2 days from now." And since they didn't have refrigeration, so the meal was spoiled. So we see that Rava wasn't allowing him to do it on the 90th day. So Ashi is telling Amemar, "So how are you in the generation?" Amemar was one of Rava's talmidim. How are you doing on the 90th day? And Amem answers him, "No, he sudas nisuin havoi. That wasn't a suda of erusin like you think. That was actually a suda of nisuin. Sure, nisuin you're not allowed to do on the 90th day. You have to wait until the 92nd day." So therefore, Rava told him, "Sorry, but the wedding has to be called off and rescheduled for at least 2 days from now." But erusin, Amem was saying, is not a problem, because that's not what Rava had a problem with in the first place. However, the Gemara says v'hilchasa, the bottom line halacha is, when it comes to the 24 months for nursing, she does have to wait full 24 months, besides for which the day the baby was born. Sorry, I mentioned before the day the husband died. Really, it's aside from the day the baby was born. So the baby was born, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, for example, then the 2 years begin from Beis Nissan. So besides for that, b'chutz miyem shenis arisabai, and besides for the day that she had the erusin, so in other words, if the baby was born, Rosh Chodesh Nissan of Tavshin Pei, then she would have to wait until Beis Nissan Tavshin Pei days to do erusin. So we are applying that rule even to erusin, not only to nisuin. And the same way, when it comes to the 3 months, we also have to wait for 3 months besides for the day on which her husband died, and besides for the day of the new Erusin. If her husband died, let's say Rosh Chodesh Nissan, then we're going to need, you have 29 more days in Nissan, 29 because you don't count the day that he died, you have 29 more days in Nissan, 29 in year, brings you to 58, 2 more, 30 and 7 brings you to 88, 2 days in Tammuz will bring you to 90, and then I'm Gimel Tammuz, she'll be able to have new Erusin. And that's the halacha. So even though we said before maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi and like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, who are makel in that, in practice we're not, and we are machmir. Nowadays, there is some discussion. Rav Moshe, for example, has a tshuva on the subject. Nowadays, women don't generally nurse until 2 years, and sometimes you have. It helps the kid if she's able to get remarried, because then she'll have a new husband who will help support her and the kid. So maybe therefore sometimes maybe you have kulis of her being able to remarry within the 24 months. But the 3 months is pretty much absolute. Then we said in the Mishnah, chutz min almana chola. We said that Rabbi Yossi had agreed with Rabbi Yehuda that there's no problem doing erusin during the 3 months, because erusin is not going to lead to the conception of a child anyway. So they're allowed to during the 3 months chutz min almana chola, with the exception of an almana, because she's in avelus. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Chista kal v'chomer. So Rav Chista says, I have a problem with that explanation of Rabbi Yossi. Shouldn't it be a kavachomer that there shouldn't be an issue with it? Uma b'mokam she'osu l'chavis, madoch, in a case where during the 30 days of Avelos, you're not allowed to do laundry, but mutar le'oris, but you are allowed to do erusin during that time. Because Rashi explained, even though it's true that people usually make a simcha for erusin, really it's not so much connected with simcha, it's more you're accomplishing a mitzvah. You're doing erusin, which is going to eventually lead to a marriage, and which is going to lead to the mitzvah of getting married and then doing pru avu. But the erusin in and of themselves are not such a simcha that you shouldn't be able to do them during the shloshim. So even during the shloshim, you're not allowed to do laundry. Actually, we're not talking during the shloshim. Rather, the mabam makom she'asa l'chavis means during the week of Tisha B'Av, as we're going to talk about soon. Now, we have, by the way, we have on minhag is that the restrictions that we're talking about apply throughout the 9 days. But midina de gemara is not like that. Sfaradim actually don't do that either. The minhag of keeping them throughout the 9 days is an Ashkenazic minhag. The Dina de Gemara and the Sfaradic Minhag is actually, they only apply during the actual week in which Tisha B'Av falls, which means that if Tisha B'Av falls out on Sunday, then it means you don't have these restrictions at all, except on Tisha B'Av itself, of course. But anyway, during the week of Tisha B'Av, when you're not allowed to do laundry, mutar le'oris, but you're still allowed to do erusin during that time, so then, mokam shemutar l'chavis, at a time then during the shloshim where you are allowed to do laundry, you're allowed to do laundry during shloshim. It's only during shiva that you can't. So ein din shemutar le'oris, shouldn't it be a kavachomer that you're allowed to do erusin? So why is Rabbi Yossi saying that for 30 days you can't do erusin? So the Gemara says, Maihi, what exactly are we talking about? What's this, where are the details of what we're talking about? So to tell, we learn in a Mishnah in Tainus, Shabbos Shechal Tisha B'Av B'Socha, during the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, also the Safar of the Shabbos, you're not allowed to take haircuts or to do laundry, or the Chamishi Mutum of Nekvar Shabbos. Now on the Thursday of that week, you would be allowed to, in honor of Shabbos, meaning we're talking about back then when they didn't have a fixed calendar like we have, and Tisha B'Av could fall out on Friday. So if Tisha B'Av fell out on Friday, then on Thursday you would be Mutter to take haircuts, even though it's the day before Tisha B'Av, because of the honor of Shabbos, so you don't go into Shabbos looking unkempt. The Tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Kodim Azman Azeh, even before that time, which we assume that Kodim Azman Azeh means before Tisha B'Av. It sounds like it means throughout that same week. Ha'omim Matim B'Iskehem, people reduce the amount of business that they do, Miliso Militin Milidnes Milintoya, as far as buying and selling and building and building and planting. Tosfos says that primarily when we're talking about when we're talking about over here doing business and building, I mean, so building, specifically building and planting, we mean buildings that are being done for simcha. For example, building for simcha would be building a house in which a wedding is going to take place. They used to have the minhag in those times that the house that a wedding took place in would become the new house for the chosan and kala. So that kind of thing is a binyan shal simcha. And a natiya shal simcha would be, for example, Tosfos brings from those gemaras, abruniki shal malachim, a special kind of tree that kings would plant, or that kings would plant for shade and for beauty. So therefore Tosfos says that maybe the list of a litan, maybe they're doing business over here also means business of simcha. For example, things that have to do with a wedding. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, it just means that during that time, during the week of Tisha B'Av, you should be doing less business than usual. But it is not necessarily business of simcha. Anyway, so but the Braisa continues, arsin, you are allowed to do arsin, avaloi kointin, you're allowed to actually get married during that time. That ain't arsin, so we don't get married during the whole 3 weeks. But again, that's an extension of the minhag. We're talking the Dinah de Gemara over here. So anyway, so the ain oisin sudas erusin, you're not allowed to make a suda of erusin during that time. So we see that during the week of Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to take haircuts, you're not allowed to do laundry, but you are allowed to do erusin. So what would be the logic of Rabbi Yossi and our Mishnah to say that during the 30 days of Avelus for the woman after her husband, she shouldn't be able to do erusin? So the more answers, kitanya hi koidim de koidim tanya. That braisa, when it says koidim asman azeh, doesn't mean during the week of Tisha B'Av. It means before the week of Tisha B'Av. It means beginning from the beginning of the 9 days. So during that time, then we're saying that then you're allowed to do laundry, but on the face of it, the braisa is saying that no, during the week of Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to do laundry, and you're also not allowed to do erusin. So therefore, Rav Chisda's Kal V'Chomer falls away. So Omar Rava, but Rava says no, the Kodim to Kodim Nami Kavachomer. Still, we can still make a Kavachomer based on earlier in the 9 days. So again, if Tisha B'Av, let's say, falls out on Tuesday, so we're saying the week of Tisha B'Av means the 2 days before Tisha B'Av, means Sunday and Monday of that week. The previous week before that, from the beginning of the 9 days, is called Kodim to Kodim. But we can make a Kavachomer as well. During that time, we're saying you're not supposed to do business, or at least not as much business as usual, and yet Mutal Oris, you're allowed to do Erisin. So then during the 30 days, during the Shloshim of Avelus, where you're allowed to do business, shouldn't it be a Kavachomer, you're allowed to do Erisin? So again, why is Rabbi Yossi telling us you can't? So you answer, you're right, the Gemara says. You're right. You have to fix up the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi is not saying that all women can do erusin during the 3 days. In fact, except for an almana. In fact, even an almana would be able to do erusin during the 3 days. You're right. Rather, what he means to say in the Mishnah is that all women can get married, except for an almana, can't get married during the 3 days because of avelus. So in other words, at this point, the machloikas, we thought the machloikas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is about Avelis. Rabbi Yehuda, though, also agrees you can't get married during Shloshim because of Avelis. What they're arguing is, what about a woman who was previously married? So Rabbi Yehuda would say that she having been previously fully married, and now there's a possibility that she's pregnant from her first husband, then therefore she can only do erusin during the 3 months, not nisuin. Rabbi Yossi is allowing her to even get fully married. If she was divorced, then right away, and if she was widowed, then 3 days because of avelus. So they want to ask the last letter of Rabbi Yossi, Lahavchin. So what? Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold to this concept of the three chodshei avchana, that we need to be able to distinguish whether the baby was from her first husband or her second husband? So the Gemara says one possibility is less likely. Sure, one possibility is he doesn't hold of that. It's not that likely that she's pregnant at that point that we should have to worry about it. The Iboy same of Olam, in fact, we had at the end of the previous parak that Rabbi Yossi was Mako on these dinim and said that many times they take steps to avoid becoming pregnant. Okay, here she didn't know her husband was going to die or divorce her, so maybe she didn't take such steps. But still, Rabbi Yossi maybe potentially says that it's not so likely that she's pregnant that we should have to make her wait 3 whole months. The Iboy same of Olam is the other possibility is maybe he does agree with that. The aim of Rabbi Yossi and Kolarus is Grushas Yinasu. Okay, so maybe we have to fix it up further, and Rabbi Yossi would say that any woman who previously was an Arusa and now is divorced, then she can get married right away. So when she was an arusa and was widowed, then fine, she has to wait 30 days because of shloshim. When she was married, then we would have to make her wait because she might be pregnant. But if she's only an arusa, where there's no possibility that she's pregnant from her arus, and she's divorced, so there's no avelos, then Rabbi Yossi is saying she can get married right away. Then in that case, isn't Rabbi Yossi saying effectively the same thing of Rabbi Yehuda as Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda also says that an arusa can get married right away. So after all, everybody agrees that an almona can't get married during 30 days because of avelos. So where would be the point of argument between them? And the answer is ikabinao nesua le'aretz. The naftamina between them would be as far as a woman who previously was married and now she wants to do erusin. Rabbi Yehuda saw the suah mutaref le'aris. Rabbi Yehuda would say she was married before, but now she can do erusin because erusin is not going to lead to pregnancy, and there's no reason to make the gzera. Rabbi Yossi saw her, whereas Rabbi Yossi is going to say that only if she was divorced is she allowed to marry right away. But Rabbi Yossi saw the suah le'aris. Rabbi Yossi is going to say that if she was married. And Rabbi Yossi would say that if she was divorced, then she can and she was an arusa, then she can get married right away. But if she was married, then even if she was divorced, so there's no matter of avelos, but still there's the matter of that we don't want her to even do erusin right away because erusin may be confused with nisuin and then they may do nisuin during the 30 days. During the 90 days rather, during the 3 months. So the Gemara asks on that, the sover of Yossi Nisua Asura Le'aris. So you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yossi is saying that a woman who was previously married is not allowed to do new erusin during the 3 months because we're concerned that if she does erusin, then that may lead people to think that you're allowed to do nisuin as well. V'hatanya, we learn in a brayse, Rabbi Yossi, and v'kol ha'noshim yisar, so chutz min almana, any women are allowed to get to do erusin during that 3 months. Chutz min almana, with the exception of a widow, with neher ibul, because of avelos, because she's in avelos for a month. The kama ibul shalosh shloshim yom, and how long is the avelos? 30 days. So therefore she has to wait 30 days. And Rabbi Yossi continues, v'chulon lo yinasu ad shiulam shloshim hadashim. Any other woman who was married has to wait 3 months because of avchana. So we see, in other words, that Rabbi Yossi says that she's not allowed to do erusin because we thought in order to distinguish between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda that Rabbi Yossi is saying that she's not allowed to do erusin, but here we clearly see in the braisa that he says she can do erusin, she just can't do nisuin. So the Gemara asks back. Hi, my kushya. What exactly is the kasha you're asking from this braisa? Ilema de katoni Rabbi Yossi and kol anoshim yisarsu. Is it on the basis of that Rabbi Yossi is saying in the braisa that all women are able to do erusin? And we said before that he says that an asua is not allowed to. So what? Mi alimim lasnisin. Is the braisa any stronger than our Mishnah? Where the Mishnah also said kol anoshim yisarsu and yukim the ba'arusas grushas yinasu. We said that in the end, it means only that if she was an arusa and divorced, only then is Rabbi Yossi saying she's allowed to get married right away now, because as an arusa, there's no problem that she was, that she could have been pregnant, and as a grusha, there's no problem of avelos. So we said, kol anoshim, we still said it means one specific case. Hochinami, the same way in the braisa, kol arusas, grusas, yinashu. The same way in the Braisa, you can say that when he says kol anoshim, we can mean we're limiting it specifically to when she was an arusa and she was divorced from the erusin. So that's not a contradiction to how we explained Rabbi Yossi before. Elam is safer. Rather, we can say the question is from the end of the Braisa. Dekatani b'kulon lo yinosu ad shiulam shloish chadashim. We said all of them. And necessarily here we have to be talking about women who were previously married, not just arusas, because we already said that the Reisha is talking about arusas, so the Reisha said that arusas are allowed to. So if a Sefer is saying they're not allowed to, must be talking about nesuas. And the Mishnah had said, the Braise had said, Lo yinosu ad shiravan shlosha chodashim, they're not allowed to get married till 3 months. In suri hudaloi, implying they're not allowed to get married, they're not allowed to do nisuin, ho itrusi shapir dami, implying that erusin would be fine. So we don't make a zera that you're not allowed to do erusin because you may come to do nisuin. Rav Yossi had said that, we explained Rav Yossi before to say that you can't. So how can we understand Rav Yossi that way if the Braise is clearly saying otherwise? Omar Rava. So Rava says, Tritz ve'emahon. We can answer, we can reconcile and say that the Braise is saying as follows. Rav Yossi, and the kol arusas grushas yinosu, any arusa who was divorced is able to get married right away because the fact that she was an arusa means there's no problem of havchana. The fact that she was divorced means there's no problem of avelus. So she can get married right away. Chutz min almona mepnei ha'ivul, with the exception an arusa is not allowed, an arusa who was an almona is not allowed to because of avelus. V'kama ivul shalosh shloshim yom, that would be 30 days. Or nesuos, when the woman was previously married, lo yisarusu ad she'evan shloshim hadoshim, then they cannot do erusin until 3 months. So in other words, even though the Braisa had used the expression lo yinosu, fine, we can change that and say that it means lo yisarusu, they're not allowed to do erusin. The Gemara says, so what are you telling me then? So the whole Braisa you're telling me is talking about an arusa. So the first part is saying that if she's a grusha, she can get married right away. The first half of the Braisa then is talking about an arusa, saying if she's a grusha, she can remarry right away if she's an almona, she has to wait 30 days. And the sefer is saying that if she's nesua, she always has to wait 3 months. The problem with that is, if we're saying in the resha that we're talking about an arusa who is an almona, and you're saying she can't remarry right away because of avelus, but almona mina erusin mi isla ibul. If she's an almona only from erusin, is there even avelus for her chosen? V'hatani rabchia ba'ami. Didn't we, Rav Chiya Ba'ami taught a braisa, which we had previously in the Masechta, in the second parak, the third parak, Ishka Yarusa lo onin v'lo mitamela, when his wife is only an arusa, then he's not an onin for her, so that he doesn't have a ninus from when she passed away until that day. There's no din of a ninus, where he's potter for most mitzvahs. V'lo mitamela, he's not able to, if he's a choyin, he's not able to become tamei to her, because he can only become tamei when she's his full wife. The same thing, she is not if he dies, then she doesn't have to be in aninus for him, and she is not tome for him, which we discussed before when we first had that Gemara. What does that mean? She doesn't have an issue of becoming tome. She's perfectly allowed to be a wife of a kohen, or a daughter of a kohen is allowed to become tome. So we said two possibilities. One is that it means she doesn't have to become tome for him. She could if she wants to, but she doesn't have to. The other possibility, Rashi said, was that we're talking about doing the Sholosh Regalim, where a person has a mitzvah to be Tahar, and therefore, so now during that time, she shouldn't become Tameh because he's only her Oros. And the Braisa continues, Mesa, if she dies during the Erusin, Eina Yosha, then he doesn't inherit from her. Meshu, but if he dies, goyva ksuba, so that she does collect her ksuba, we're talking about specifically in a place where they write a ksuba during the time of the erusin. So then already she's entitled to collect that ksuba. Anyway, the point is the Braisa is saying that a wife doesn't do avelos for her husband when it was only erusin. So what are you telling me if she's an arusa, she would have to wait a month because of avelus for her husband? You're right. The Gemara says, Ela tanoi. So rather, we have to answer that in fact, let's go back to the original understanding of Rabbi Yossi, that we're talking about a woman who was married, not just in erusin, but she had nisuin. And Rabbi Yossi, in fact, is saying that now during the 1 month, she can't do erusin. We started the sugya with her chista asking, what about, don't we have a kavachoymer? If you're allowed to do erusin during the 9 days, shouldn't she be allowed to during the 30 days of avelus? The answer is tanoim. It's actually machloekas tanoim. The tanya, mirash chodesh vadatainis, during the entire 9 days, from a chodesh until tishvav, and people reduce the amount of business that they do. They don't buy and sell as much. They don't build and plant. As we said, building and planting specifically things that are connected with simchas. And they also don't do erusin. So we see that this Tana says you can't do erusin during the 9 days. You're not allowed to get married. then Shabbos, Shachal, Tisha B'Av, Besoicha, then during the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, then you have more restrictions. Also, the Safar L'Chabbos, you're not allowed to take haircuts or do laundry. And also, the Oris, you're not allowed to do Erusin either. Well, that you don't need already because you have that during the entire 9 days. Now, the Yesh Omim, Kala Chodesh Osir, and then there's Yesh Omim that the Yesh Omim that the entire month is, that the entire month, even after Tisha B'Av, is Osir. So we see that there's a Tana that says that you're not allowed to do Erusin before Tisha B'Av. Now, we had a Braisa on Amud Aleph that says that you could do Erusin even during the 9 days, or even during the week of Tisha B'Av. So we see that there are two Tanoim. Okay, so Rabbi Yossi holds like the opinion that you're not allowed to do Erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av. Therefore, the Kal v'Chomer of Rav Chisda doesn't apply according to him. He would say that fine, you're not allowed to do Erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av, and you're also not allowed to do Erusin during the Shloshim of Avelis. Where's Rav Chisda? Where Rav Chisda was basing himself on the other Braisa on Amud Aleph that says that you are allowed to. However, Maskif Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi challenges that. He says, "Memaydi le'oris le'oris mamish." How do you know that in this last Braisa that we said that you now have le'oris, you now have to do erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av or during the 9 days? How do you know it means le'oris mamish? That it means literally to do erusin. Maybe it only means you're not allowed to make a suda in honor of the erusin. Hold it or shaper dummy. That maybe you are allowed to actually do erusin during that time. So then in that case, your chista's kavachoyma comes back. So the answer is, the Gemara says, hachi hashta. The Gemara answers, e hachi. Well, if you're going to say that, it means a suda of erusin, then what about the Braisa also mentions milisa, they're not allowed to get married. What are you going to think? Linose nami lemevad sudas nisuinu to osir holisa shapu dami? What are you going to think? You're allowed to get married during that week of Tisha B'Av. You're just not allowed to make a suda for it? Of course not. Nisuin itself is also. So obviously the Braisa and nisuin themselves are also during that time. Well, the same thing erusin during that time, according to this Braisa, are also. Okay, so you want to ask back, hachi hashta, how do you compare those two? The shleimim nisuin v'loy suda if a simcha, a wedding itself, even if you don't make a suda, the wedding itself is a simcha. So therefore, there's reason to ask the weddings during the week of Tisha B'Av. Ela erusin v'loy suda mi if a simcha. If you just do erusin, if you just do hareyat l'kodesh asli, and you don't do a suda, is there a simcha? So no, it could very well be that the Braisa is saying you can't do a sudas erusin because that would be simcha, but you're allowed to do plain erusin, and nisuin would be also either way. So therefore, so the Braisa may very well mean that you are in fact allowed to do erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av, and in that case, we're back to the Chista's Kal v'Chomer. In that case, what is Rav Yossi saying? Ella Omer Rav Ashi. So rather, Rav Ashi says a different answer. All this time, we're assuming that the restrictions of the 9 days and of the week of Tisha B'Av are the same as the restrictions of Avelos, but not necessarily, says Rav Ashi. Shiny Avelos Chadosha Me'Avelos Yishana. There's a difference between a new Avelos, where her husband just passed away, versus an old Avelos, Tisha B'Av, after all. I mean, it is a tremendous catastrophe that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, but it is an old thing. It happened a long time ago. And therefore, we can be more make on it. So yes, you might be allowed to do erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av, but you're not allowed to do. But Rav Yossi is saying you can't do it during Shloshim. So Rav Chisda's Kal v'Chomer doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. And furthermore, shiny avelos de rabbin, avelos de yachid. Furthermore, there's a difference between the avelos of the rabbin, of the whole Jewish people, versus the avelos of this individual amana, which would be. So Rashi says. That it means, in other words, that the avelos of rabbin we can be more lenient on, since many people are involved in it. So therefore, that itself kind of eases the pain of it, as opposed to the avelos of a yachid, which she doesn't necessarily have anybody else sharing it with her. Then it's a much more intense avelos. So Tosfos learns the other way around. Tosfos learns the fact that it's avelos to rabbin would be a reason to be machmer. So fine. Therefore, we're more machmer on doing business. Because if people are doing business just like they do the rest of the year, it looks like they're not doing avelos. But that's not reason enough to ask her out erusin, where it's only a short-term thing. You do the erusin and that's that. So therefore, we have reason to say that that would be allowed even during the week of Tisha B'Av. And that is, in fact, the halacha. You are, in fact, allowed to do erusin. Tosfos gets into a long discussion about all the ins and outs of it. You can see there's a very long Tosfos over here. But anyway, the point is that the halacha is you are allowed to do erusin any time, even on Tisha B'Av itself. You would be allowed to do erusin. You just can't make a suda for it. So uh, so
So therefore, so that's that. So we're, so we stick with that. Where Reb Yossi is in fact saying that that you're not allowed to do Erusin during the 30 days because of Avelos. On the other hand, Reb Yossi doesn't have to say for the by the same token you're not allowed to do Erusin during the during the 9 days. He might well say that you're allowed to do Erusin themselves just without a Suda, even during the 9 days, even during the week of Tisha B'Av. Okay. Yeah.